Croeso. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the CC4 Museum of Welsh Cricket Podcasts. This is the last of three episodes of the podcast devoted to one of Glamorgan's greatest ever players, Matthew Maynard. But I thought I'd start this episode with an appeal. Since he finished as the Red Bull coach with Glamorgan last September, Matt has embarked on the latest of his charity fundraising walks. Starting at John O'Groats, he set out to walk the length of the United Kingdom. Hospitalised after the first few days, Matt had to revise his timetable, but true to his intentions, he has now almost completed his Wellyman walk and will finish at Land's End this weekend. If you are a listener to this podcast, I would urge you to visit Matt's fundraising page on Just Giving. Go to the Just Giving website and search for Matt Maynard's Wellyman walk, or click on the link in the programme notes to this episode. Let's see if we can get him to his fundraising target of £20,000. Thank you in advance for donating and supporting Matt's two chosen charities, the Professional Cricketers Trust and Help for Heroes. And once you've donated, why not sit back and listen to Matt as he talks to us a little more.
You used a phrase in your book about coaching, saying it's about oiling the engine, not overhauling it. I quite like that. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it depends what levels, doesn't it? You know, I think I personally believe we don't do enough of basic coaching these days. It's all about play and stuff like that, so which is fine, but see grips on some of the young players these days coming through, and they can't hit ball in certain areas because the grip's all wrong, you know. So they all tried and tested, pick the bat up. So that would be almost like, you know, I'd go back to that personally as a coach, if I was coaching young player, and then get them to play from that. I'd get them to... But then with these pros, it's about realizing how, you know, the top England players, how you give them that freedom to trust themselves explicitly. And I think what McCullum and Stokes have currently done with the team is unbelievable. You know, they're playing without fear, aren't they? And what it appears to fear without consequence. There are obviously consequences, but they're going out there without... Actually, there aren't consequences the way we play because we've got such a supportive dressing room. And I think that is hugely important. So from my coaching, I had bad experience of team environments and dressing rooms that were very selfishly driven. And I didn't like that. And I didn't respond to that. I need to feel, I guess, wanted in a dressing room, but also respected within that space as well. And then if got that, then yeah. So everything I tried to do as a coach or as a head coach was to try and create that environment. As an assistant coach, it was getting to know the players and just making the odd suggestion on certain aspects of their game. So not at all changing them, but maybe just building in their aspect of how they can score and where they can score runs. So very rarely was it technical. There was one I remember with Marcus Trescothick in Barbados for the World Cup. He just wasn't quite getting into the ball. And he couldn't, and he was getting frustrated in this net. And the pitch was a bit slow as well. But I couldn't see anything. Everything looked great. Everything looked fantastic from front on, out of shape he was. And then it kind of went side on. And it didn't look too bad, and then went from behind and just noticed that he wasn't releasing the heel of his back foot when he was getting into the ball. So he was just staying back a little bit. As soon as he released that heel, he was getting bang, and that was it. But it felt like half an hour to sort the problem out, but it was probably 5 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes. And then bang, and then he flew again, you know. So that was a technical aspect that was holding him back, but just not releasing that heel, you know. And the reason why I spotted that, because he used to always release his heel. Some people twist on it, but Tez was kept it lovely and parallel, but just used to release the heel to allow him to get it back into it. So that stuff like that, I love kind of, right, I've got a problem here. And I know the problem is he's not getting to the ball, but there's a source to that. You know, no point in me shouting to Tez, get into the ball a bit more, because he's trying to. You know, but what's stopping him biomechanically from doing that? And it's finding that source. That's what I love, that puzzle about batsmanship, or battership, I think I should say these days, about finding what is that component that is stopping someone being able to move in a certain way to get to the ball. And that things like that really intrigue me, and working that out. Because when you do work it out, and then they pass it on, and then you do give you three or four reasons to go with it, then that's gold dust. But and that's all it really needs with those boys, I think, with the international boys, brushing up very, very little bit on your technique. But it's about how you score, where you score, getting clear on that, you know.
The last few years have seen lots and lots of different ways of analyzing the game, lots of data, lots of video analysis, and so on. Do you like that as a coach? Do you use that a lot, or
So there are various different types of players, aren't there? Some players are thinkers. I talked about being a bit of a feeler there myself, with wanting to feel collected in an environment and respected within an environment. So I've got a bit of a feeler inside of me. But then you've got the enforcers, and you've got the mosquitoes. So the mosquito doesn't want any information of that sort whatsoever. So team meetings where you get together and analyze the opposition, you probably only get into two or three players maximum, and the others they're just being bored. And we used to have them with England, and it would come up, where do we bolt a Ponting? And it came right back to hit the top of off. That was it. And it might be all right, bolt a Gilchrist, yeah, come round the wicket, try and get it away, but basically over the top of off. It's just like, okay, so every batter, yeah, top of off, yeah. So, but they're good to get engages going, I suppose, team meetings, if you open it up to the batters and bowlers to just chat about things. So you're actually talking down the specifics of that. If it's a tell session, this guy, here's the footage, bang, you've got to be here, you've got to be there. Don't forget, when you're doing those sessions, you have all the information as a coach. Players have to take that out. So if you're changing your tactics too much, so player A, his weakness on all the dot percentages is 4.5 stump. Okay, so you're trying to, yet his mega strength is on 5.5 stump. So if you go a bit wide to him, he's going to absolutely cane you. And if you actually come into his stumps, his second best strength is hitting through mid-wicket. So you can actually, I think they can be useful for the right individuals. I as a coach will always have a look at them. But you're also relying with a lot of this stuff at the moment because it's fed in manually by the accuracy of the person who's feeding the information in. And sometimes we don't get that right because they're human as well. So, some of the information that they get, everything eventually will be all be done automatically, and it'll be done, through. I mean, we've got some great systems now at the club that you can video a session or video a batter, say, if he wants to have a look at himself, and he's got a TV screen with a 3 second delay or 2.5 second delay. So he can see his position and his shot and stuff like that, and bang, have a little look, see if he likes him or not. So there's lots of that which is invaluable, I think, for a player to see himself and look and see how he's balanced and how a bowler's coming through. Is he hitting, is he hitting his lines? Is he hitting the lines? It follows the ball, this TrackMan system, and it's all on a mobile, on a tablet. So it's stuff like that I think is invaluable and really good. But what you still need is when you get outdoors, you have to forget, kind of repeat all that with the added pressure of trying to dismiss someone or trying to score runs off someone. And that's the key, isn't it? So you can, I think you use the data, how it sets you. I've always been more of a coach to let's try and get our operation in place. So as a bowler, if your best ball is the back of a hand slower ball that's going to clip the top of the stumps in the diet, then you bowl that, irrespective of that the batsman, that might be his favoured ball. That it might be he actually picked up slow balls quite well, this batter. So the analyst might say, go wide Yorker to this guy. But he said, well, wide yorker is like my fourth strength, my fifth strength. I'm not very good at it. I either bowl too wide or I bowl full tosses and they get carted over point for six. Yeah, but this guy don't like the wide yorker. So he'll go wide yorker, full toss, bang, over point for six. Then he'll bowl a slow one, do him like a kipper. So I just stick to your strengths was kind of my, always kind of been my philosophy. If we can't look after our own house, why worry about what the building next door? We've got to get our house right first.
You mentioned difficult environments and environments that didn't help you. Do you want to say a little bit about your England career and your reflections on that and how it maybe didn't quite work out for you?
Yeah, look, I think one of the things, right, I never, I talked earlier about watching Both doing that to the Aussies, and but I never thought I'd be in that position to be able to do that. So when I got the call against the West Indies in 88, it was kind of a little bit of a surprise, but obviously a wonderful surprise. And we get Peter May, we get a dinner beforehand. So the night before, we're all sitting at this table, and you're the good luck tomorrow, 11 best players in the country, bad luck today, whoever, 12th man, but you guys, best 11 in the country. And look forward to receiving your caps tomorrow. It'll be a very proud moment for you, etc. Because we'd already had our jumpers. We'd had those earlier in that day. We'd had pitched up, we'd had our jumpers and stuff like that. So I get my cap the next day. It's got PRD written in it. Paul Downton, old Paul Downton cap. They'd run out of caps. I think we'd use 27 players in that series or 26 players in that series. And it was what, and I also got a comment that day that, oh, that's Lammy's seat. You're only keeping that warm for Lammy, who's missed the test match with injury, who's going to come back for the next test against Sri Lanka. So this was the last test of the. So all of a sudden, you don't feel part of that kind of environment just by how people torture. I think it's, what they're doing now. I think it started under Duncan Fletcher and David Graveney, to be fair. Those two with the England team got it a lot more settled, a lot less one test wonders in their time together, but built something really good. And it's great to see that it's been continued a lot more now, And that was the thing. You were never sure. And even look, I've spoken to Mark Rambakesh about this, and he got dropped nine times from that England test team. So he said it's every time after the second time, every time he came back to play after that, he was looking over his shoulder, wondering if he was going to get a drop again. I think Graham Hick got dropped 10 times. Two of our, two batters who got over 100 centuries each. Yet they're always felt they were looking over their shoulder that they were going to be dropped. So I think that was indicative of the probably the environment, through the 80s and 90s, most definitely that, of how, of how people were, I suppose. If you broke into that circle, you'd be fine, but you had to, you probably had to fly as a player, like I first class debut flew, but it didn't happen with me internationally. I needed a bit more time, but it never came, and yeah, but it was also a that time I guess you had to try and part of the play. The most I felt actually at home was on that 94 tour of the because I got to know the players. We'd had so with Jack Russell and Derry, Chris Lewis, Robin Smith, obviously the Hussain, Thorpe, Rampakash, Athers was captain, Stewie was there. And it was so got to know those players because we had a camp as well, and played in the first game, felt really good, at the 30 yard and got out trying to. I was batting with 10, I think, at the time, and got out last wicket. And Boyce came to me and said, "Hey lad, I should have gotten that out there. You might get a good ball in second dig, and then you'll be averaging 17 or whatever rather than 35." And I did. I got a snort of the second innings, gloved on in front of my nose, and yeah, and that was the last test I played. But I actually felt really good for the first time, really. But yeah, wasn't to be. And I found out when the coach said, "Matt, bring the balls back after you've had your net," and they all left. And there were only a couple of players who stayed behind. That was before the second test match. Yeah, and again, but I think you learn a lot from that. You know, you learn a lot from that of how you would like to try and treat people. You know?
Talking of environments and trying to create a good, positive environment, one of the lovely stories I liked about you was when you were coach at Somerset and you learnt to drive the coach.
Yeah, so they have a team. They have a team bus wherever they go. So every championship match, every one day game, every T20 away game, they'll take the team bus. But there was one driver. So the driver's been a guy called Nick Yeo for years. But say if you're coming back from Durham or Leeds or whatever, a journey that's over, he has to take a half an hour stop and a 45-minute stop. Because your regulations to how long you can drive a single session before you have to have this break. So I was talking after the year, and I said, "Well, I'll learn to drive a bus." So Berries & Co., a bus company down in Somerset, gave me these lessons and taught me how to do this, and I passed. And so the next year I drove, helping drive the bus. So what we'd do is, if we were setting off from Somerset to go away, I'd do the first hour and a half, then we'd have a quick stop, and he could drive the rest away without having to stop again. And likewise, so I would always do that first leg to allow us in then to get back, because then after the end of the game, after I've driven, because I live quite close to the ground in Somerset, I could have a little glass, you know, a beer or something in the bus, and talk to the players then about the game and a bit of a debrief, you know. But get that first hour and a half, 2 hours away, and then we were fine. So, yeah. But I did it just basically to save probably an hour, hour and a half. But it was a good, you know, a good experience and stuff. And driving through London was, I'll tell you, a lot easier than driving a bus than it is driving a car in London.
Okay.
Because people make room for you because you're a big thing.
You were given an MBE for your charitable work and for sport and so on. That must have been a very proud moment for you.
Yeah, you get the just got the had no idea, obviously, and got the letter before maybe early December, I suppose, for the New Year's honours. But yeah, no, huge honour for work and charity work, and obviously the playing contribution to cricket as well. Yeah, so.
What do you think the opportunities are for young cricketers these days? Are they better than when you started? Do you think all the pathways and progressions that are in place set for to produce more kind of, you know, good Welsh cricketers of the future?
If they are getting access to all the cricketers, then yes, most definitely structured. I think you can be quite. I think you've got to open the trial process virtually every year to age groups, because some players develop a lot later than others, and obviously some develop younger. So, you know, I think, you know, keeping an eye on, I believe 14 to 16 are massive growth years, one way or the other. You either grow a little bit, so get left behind, or you actually start developing and then fly. So, there's certain things. Are we getting access to as many players as we possibly can? So, because we've got a lot of talented sports people in Wales, are we? How many of those have got access to cricket? Would be the first question. You know, a lot of Valleys guys. You know, the vast majority of players back in the day, and people talk about being cyclical and stuff like this, but they used to come down from Swansea. Swansea area, yeah, Arthur Francis, Barry Lloyd, you know, Alan Avion, Rodney Onton. I know Rodney was from, but it was all based really in Swansea. Tony, Crofty, you know, so many more. Watty, all kind of the West, and we don't see any really emerging from the West anymore. Andrew Salter was probably the last one, even though he's further. There are not many coming up from the West. There's got to be a reason for that, because that was a hotbed of cricket for decades and decades and decades of Glamorgan cricket. the West was, as they used to say, West is best. And you look now, it's a lot more around the Gwent area, Cardiff area, where the Valley, where are the Valley's players? You know, Johnny Hughes type player who scored a 200s in a game for the club. Where are those lads from the Valleys? Why have we got access to those? Or are we making it too expensive for a lot of families? Because now you've got all these organised teams, you've got all the organised equipment and kit. I believe they still have to fork out quite a bit of money each year to try and get on, you know, whichever program they get selected for. You know, for me, all, and it, I might be wrong, I might be outdated now. Maybe all the kit is free. You know, all the shirts and jumpers are free for the age groups now. I certainly hope they are because I believe they should be. You shouldn't have to pay for the right to, you know, wear a jersey. You're representing this team, therefore that jersey is given to you as recognition of that, you know, especially at national level, you know, if you're playing for Wales under 13s, 15s, 17s, you know, all that should be a, to me, a given that it's provided. There's budget for that somewhere, you know. So we've got to be careful not to, you know, stop people having access to stuff like that.
What are your plans, Matt, in the immediate kind of future? What have you got, if you're able to tell us, what have you got in the pipeline? What
Well,
have you
only the
kind of
100
looking?
this year so far. I've got some work for the ECB, some coach mentoring for the ECB. I've already done some. I'm doing some more. Looking forward to that. I'm completing the walk, so that's all going to be. That was my main priority this year, was to finish the walk before the start of the season. So that's done. I'm going to then take my wife away for Easter, which we've never ever done. So that'll be nice. Come back, watch a bit of the Glammy Lads, and just kind of, yeah, just take it easy this summer. Work then with us again for the 100, which was so enjoyable last year, I must admit. I really enjoyed how we went about stuff. And then see what's out there. But yeah, no rush. Just enjoying just a bit of time, really. Not slinging at the moment, if I'm honest.
I know you've played a little bit of seniors cricket for Wales. Is that something that you'd like to try again?
No, whereas my walking's fine and stuff like this, every time I try and move from side to side, my right hip really give me a lot of jip. So I am doing yoga, I am stretching it out regularly, but it's not in a place, I don't think, where I should force it playing sport again. And you know, it's because there are masters now with a Professional Cricketers Trust. They have a masters team and stuff like this, and but I just don't. Yeah, I just don't. I don't think my body will allow me anymore, unfortunately. Walking's just straight line. That's easy. You know, even if you're going uphill, it's straight line, straight. Any movement and stuff, I find it does give me a lot of grief afterwards. So never say never mind. But probably, you know, if I get a new hip, then you never know. But no, at the minute it's too sore. Yeah, it's not good for me, I don't think.
I know in your book you said you'd never be an umpire and you'd never sit on a committee. Where do you stand now on those two things?
I still think umpiring is one of the toughest jobs. The scrutiny, it doesn't, no. I admire what the likes of Alex Wolf have done. I really do, and James Kettlebrewer and the likes. I think they've done brilliantly, you know. But for me, it's no. I just love being hands on. I think that's something you can't really do. Well, you are hands on, obviously, as an umpire, and get to travel and. You know, it's a wonderful life, but I'm not wired that way. I'm not wired that way to be an umpire. In terms of committee, if I felt a committee could do good, that it's worthwhile, that it's not just a seat around a table, then yeah, I think if you can influence things in a positive way, then why not? And I know Michael Cann has tried very, very hard to break onto committees without much luck. He's got a huge amount to give the game in Wales, and he's passionate, and he's now retired, and he would like to get involved. He's got some great ideas. He's got great business knowledge as well, but he can't get on. So, and I think I'm a bit, probably at times, have been a bit more outspoken than Canny. So. I'd probably struggle.
This is going to sound maybe like an insulting question, but you've lived in Wales most of your life. You married a Welsh girl. You've made your home here. Do you feel 100% Welsh?
Yeah, I when people say where are you from, I say Wales. I see myself as Welsh. I've been here so long. I follow Wales rugby, Cardiff rugby, Llanelli back in the day. That's who I wanted to play for. I wanted to play for Llanelli and Glamorgan. That was the young Matt, if you like. But no, 100%. It's. I'm very proud to have lived over 50 years in Wales and call it home. And I do see myself as Welsh. Yeah, I've been brought up in the Welsh culture. So.
Well, I'm sure I speak on behalf of all the Glamorgan supporters and probably everybody associated with the game in Wales that we really appreciate and kind of remember with great kind of joy all the service that you've given to Glamorgan, both as a player and as a coach. And we hope that you'll kind of keep in touch and come back and do something with the club or certainly with the country of Wales at some point in the future. So thank you, Matt. Thank you for giving your time today and thank you for everything that you've done.
Pleasure, Steve. I forgot to mention, but one of the things I'm looking at is setting up an academy, which would be it's location based. Obviously, is going to be crucial, getting the right location for it. But I know Wickets to Wickets has done a great job there in the, and it's a good setup. I've got an idea of my own as well, but with scholarships as well for underprivileged. So having trials for the underprivileged. Bus them all in, get them into this facility and try it. So I've got a couple of that. I'd like to do that. And just looking now, if can't get the right facility, then it can't be done. But I'd love to do something like that. I think that would be, brilliant. And then setting up something like that. So just looking at various spots at the moment, actually.
Okay, so let's watch this space.
Look, I love coaching and stuff, and I want to be a part of it, but it has to be right for me at the moment, So there's been some jobs that I've turned down out there, and because it's not right, And I'm at the time of life now with my wife where we want things kind of our way really now, if that makes sense.
Well, best wishes to you and to Sue and to Kerry. Take care of yourselves. Enjoy that
Absolutely.
Easter break. And we look forward to
Lovely.
hearing about the plans that you got for the future. Thanks ever so much, Matt.
Lovely. See you in the summer.
Many, many thanks to Matt for giving me so much time and for answering my questions so honestly and thoughtfully. Do make sure you say hello to him if you see him at Sophia Gardens, where for once he'll be a spectator and enjoying watching, or in his case, studying the cricket. Next week on the podcast, we meet a group of cricketers playing in a recently formed midweek cricket league that is going from strength to strength. Meet the Towy League cricketers from Swansea, who'll be telling us some more stories about the great game of cricket from the great country of Wales. See you next week. Hwyl fawr. Bye for now.
Oes gyda chi stori i'w rhannu gyda ni? Mae'n croeso i chi gysylltu. E-bostiwch mwcpod1921@gmail.com neu ewch i'n tudalen Facebook, Museum of Welsh Cricket Podcast, neu i'n tudalen Twitter, at Welsh Cricket Pod. Do you have a story you'd like to share with us? If so, please contact email mwcpod1921@gmail.com or go to our Facebook page, Museum of Welsh Cricket Podcast, or our Twitter, at Welsh Cricket Pod.